Bloomberg on the Economy with Mike McKee and Carol Masser. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
Our date for the party is Tian Hu, our old friend from TF Market Advisors in Beijing. And Tian was supposed to be here, but I guess Hurricane Sandy interrupted your plans a little bit. Somebody who did make it in is Susan Lee, Bloomberg Television's anchor from Hong Kong, who for some reason decided to brave the hurricane. Maybe she just wanted to see one and see if they're any different from typhoons
or something.
But she is here with us in the studio with Carol and I, and we're anxious to get started talking about this event, which is going to take place over the next 7 days, and what it means for the world, because it does mean an awful lot. Tian, as we go into it, what's the mood in Beijing? Are people anxious? Do they expect change to come? You've written a lot about how China's been on hold until this party conference.
Today's the first day, the meeting, today's the first of the meeting, and President Hu Jintao gave a keynote address and speech. And it's pretty long, and certainly we got a lot of local media coverage, and we got a lot of people pay attention to it. Certainly, you know, me and my friends, and a lot of opinion leaders, and give comments about the, you know, the keynote speech. You know, he touched upon multiple issues, but there are several issues we care about. And one is political reform, one is economic reform. And on the political reform front, we didn't see any breakthrough. And, I guess there's a reason. You know, in the Chinese communism history, and whenever you have a regime change, and on the year of regime change, you know, the report may not show you aggressive, new initiative politically. But normally in the third year, and you could see something, you know, something new in the political front. However, in the economic front, we did see some, encouraging comments or initiation from him. One thing is, this is the first time ever, you know, central government actually quantifying, you know, the well-being of regular residents. So they said, in 10 years from 2010, and, government expects, our GDP as well as, people's income level and to double. So that is the first year we're actually quantifying, you know, how people can benefit from the growth of nation's wealth. That is number one. Number two, on the economic reform front, we did mention above, two things are very important. One is the urbanization, continued urbanization. And the second is the issues related to farmers and also farmland. And those two, the urbanization and the farmlands, those two issues are closely related. And I do believe if we could address the issue of farm and farmland and as well as the urbanization, and we could actually see the new engine of China's continuing growth in the next 30 years.
Tian,
so that's our takeaway.
Tian, let me ask you, though. I mean, as you know, here in the United States, there's been some frustration, not some, a lot of frustration, a lot of disgust with the what's not working in Washington. What about the Chinese people? Do they actually believe and see and expect that this transition in government, that it will bring about some changes, that change can come?
Definitely. And, there are two things. Political reform is hard. And if we look at what happened politically, and in the Chinese recent history, last 30 years, we had three big reform. And, two actually was initiated by Deng Xiaoping, and one is under Jiang Zemin and Zhu Rongji. And, every time we're reaching a critical moment, and then with the reform, it's the crisis and pushing, calling for reform. And for example, the first one, and China, that was the early 80s, and China, basically we don't have enough goods, and we're, every person are equally poor. So in order to make people's life improve, so Deng Xiaoping started, countryside reform. and to allocate land to each farmers. And the second one is in 1992. He went to the countryside, you know, the south part of China, to tell people, you know, market economy doesn't have to be capitalism. Socialism can also have market economy. So that is the first, the second breakthrough we did. And then it's the Zhu Rongji, you know, started just state-owned enterprises reform. Up to today, we're reaching to the point over the last 30 years, the state power
is
concentrated.
Okay.
So blocking the innovation, blocking the progress further. So we need some reform.
Susan, I want to kick it off with you because in reading about the changeover, I'm trying to really kind of understand how the political system in China works. You have a premier, you have a president, you have a general committee, you have delegates, you have a standing committee.
Yeah.
Explain it to me. How does the system work?
Let me break it down for you because it is quite opaque, I have to say. So there are 82 million members of the Communist Party in China. And then out of those 82 million, 2,260, something like that, delegates are invited to the 18th Congress. So these are people from the central government, from the military, from state-owned companies, and also China's provinces as well. And then they, at this party congress, they approve changes to the party's constitution, and then they pick the next central committee, which is a group of 200 of the elite of the Communist Party. And then from these 200 people, you get the all-powerful Politburo, which has 24 members as a whole. And then within the Politburo, this is where you get the standing committee. Am I losing you there, Carol?
Yeah, I'm trying to keep track here.
Okay, so the Politburo Standing Committee, though, this is the highest echelon of government you can get. Even the president and the premier are part of this standing committee, but all of them have equal votes to the premier and the president. Can you believe that? So really, it's like a seven-person panel from what we're hearing this time around.
Yeah, there's a question
decides,
there.
Yeah, right. On the laws and China going forward.
So clear representation of the Chinese public?
That's a great question. Let's put that to Tin Ho, shall we? Tin Ho, Susan here, I just wanted to ask you, is it a good representation of the people, the standing committee?
You know, that is the goal. That is the, you know, the initial design to really, you know, we have the grassroots organization. The organization really, you know, spread around across the country. And the people in the grassroots collect all the information, opinions from people who they know, like their fathers and mothers and brothers and colleagues. And they're supposed to, you know, summarize or pick up the important information to send it to the higher level, and you know, level by level, eventually you reach to the standing committee level. So that's the system.
It's kind of like Congress here in the U.S. Then,
Tin
Ho, let me ask you also about you know, the controversy, drama unfolding, because I don't know if you've read the reports over the weekend and into this week, but who's going to be part of the standing committee? And is it 9? Is it 7? Is it 5?
So I think there's a common agreement this time. It's going to be 7.
Seven.
It's not 9.
Yeah. So, you know, we only had 9 when Hu Jintao came into presidency back in 2002. So they're reverting back to 7. But who's going to make up these 7 individuals that basically govern China for the next 10 years? Because, you know, we're hearing that Jiang Zemin is pulling the power strings now.
He's not going to be that. Actually, I think we pretty much know who are those 7 people. Xi Jinping is one, and Li Keqiang will be the prime minister, and you have Wang Qishan, who is currently the vice prime minister in charge of finance, and then you have Liu Yunshan, who is currently the minister of propaganda, and you have Zhang Gaoli, is the mayor of Tianjin, Zhang Dejiang, mayor of Chongqing, and Yu Zhengsheng, mayor of Shanghai. So you have some of them.
The question is, what is their orientation? I mean, there are two sort of competing factions in China, people who prefer more liberalization.
Reformists.
I guess you would put the reformers in the Hu Jintao camp.
Yeah.
And then Jiang Zemin, the more conservative type. And I think Susan was alluding to reports that some of Jiang Zemin's people are going to be on this committee trying to hold back liberalization.
Yeah. Okay. So it's very interesting. Actually, Jiang Zemin, we don't consider him as the guy to hold back liberalization, because he actually, you know, under him and Zhu Rongji, former prime minister, we had a much bigger economic reform. And however, in terms of political, you know, power struggle, we do see among the seven members, you know, if we don't count Xi Jinping's power position and the other six, and we see, you know, five of them, we can consider, you know, a much more, you know, part of Jiang Zemin's, you know, side. And the only one guy is Prime Minister Li Keqiang. He we consider to be the part of, we call the Youth League, Communism Youth League, part of, you know, opinions. So they do have some differences. And Jiang Zemin in this part, you know, certainly they were continuation of Deng Xiaoping's policy, which is strong government and centralize the power and the resources and just, you know, big state-owned enterprises. That's, you know, their, you know, current opinion. And for Prime Minister Li Keqiang to be, and he's much more, you know, promoting social welfare,
but isn't that,
urbanization.
But the World Bank says that that needs to change. I mean, didn't they say that the state-owned enterprises need to be removed from the economy? Mm-hmm. You need to reform the financial sector, maybe deregulate the lending rates and the underpricing of natural resources, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm getting to is, with the standing committee that you just mentioned, with Xi Jinping in office, are we going to see real reforms in the next decade?
And just quickly, got about 20 seconds here.
Yeah. The question should be, do they have other choices? So I don't think they have other choices. Most of reform in the Chinese history was really, you know, driven by the, you know, crisis. You have a crisis in order to, you know, conquer or resolve the crisis. You have no other ways but reform. So we're facing the same issue.
Now we want to talk more about the impact on the economy and on the rest of the world. TH Capital is an investment advisory firm, so Tian is well-placed to give us some advice. One of the things that we're hearing, Tian, is that we should expect China to basically sort of have a new normal growth rate, that 10% is gone. The economy's at a change changing point, an inflection point where it will still grow faster than any of the rest of us could hope to grow, but it's going to grow a little bit more slowly, and then that's going to change demand for goods from other places, so that may have an effect on a lot of companies.
The government actually set up the goal, so 10 years goal between 2010 to 2020, GDP double. And so if you use that, you know, number to calculate what is average, you know, growth rate on each year, is between 7 and 8. So if you look at the first several years of this 10 years, of this, you know, 10 years, we have already had, you know, much more than 8% growth in the last 2 years. So going forward, so the growth rate could be in the between 7 to 8. So that is the thing we're looking at. It's not really slower than before, but definitely we're not aiming at a much faster growth than before.
But Tian, one thing for sure, I mean, after a seven-quarter slowdown that we've seen in China, that the new leadership is going to see to it that the economy will not deteriorate further, correct?
There is definitely a reason to interpret the deterioration, and you know, there are multiple reasons. Definitely, you know, external, you know, like export, is one of the reasons. And the second reason is the structural change in our economy. You know, before we initiate the change after financial crisis, we were the producer of the world, and you know, we're lower, you know, the lowest in the food chain. And but now China wants to increase, you know, domestic economy. So they want to climb the ladder and to go to like a much more high tech, much more higher margin. So they shut down a lot of, you know, low margin and high energy consumption, you know, industry and sector. and to invest money into the new technology, new energy area. So investment hasn't really, generated enough return yet to offset the decline in export. And also in terms of fixed asset investment, we certainly did a lot, in 2009, 2010. And then we slowed that down and because we can't have stimulus plan every year. So last 2 years, we also suffer the, after result of those, the cash injection into the system. So there are some reasons. So if we establish a norm in the, for the past, so going forward, I think our norm is still the same. I don't see a significant change in our norm.
Well, as they switch to the effort to try to build a more demand, domestic demand-built economy, there's going to be a balancing act between encouraging Western companies to come in to provide the things the Chinese want to buy and protecting the Chinese companies that already make some of those things or would copy those things. What sectors are most likely to win approval, official approval, and therefore do well, in terms of foreign companies?
I think, in the consumer area, and we can definitely see a lot of growing. And in this keynote speech, one thing, President Hu Jintao mentioned is to increase international cooperation economically and, engaging and aggressively going out and bring in. And so that is one of the policies that are going to continue. And I don't worry about international business cooperation in that front. And also in terms of the area that could benefit, foreign, companies and investors, I think China, because we want to turn the, the farmland into a much more than, living area, increase the well-being of farmers. And I think that there are going to be a lot of demands and consumption demands from those population. And that is going to be a major area to grow and which, domestic economy going to grow along with it.
So, Tian, the best way or the smartest way that you think investors can play this leadership change in China, what would be your suggestions?
This is what I'm thinking. In terms of China economy, definitely is at bottom. And we should expect a full scope of recover next year. And we have already seen a lot of projects get approved by central government, provincial government. Those are in the fixed asset investment area. And this year's fixed asset investment area definitely different than before. Instead of a lot of investment in the road nobody driving and the house nobody living, we're going to invest in the area that's much more close to people's life. So, in terms of fixed assets, we are going to have some improvement. So that's going to be really helpful for the world. And in terms of, after we put in place those infrastructure, and I think we're going to increase the social efficiency, business efficiency, and also when all those workers, are put in the projects, they're going to gain salary, gain earnings, and those money are going to again be used in our system for demand, for consumption. So the system, the economic improvement is going to be the full scope, not one particular area. And definitely if someone wants to play safe, I think domestic consumption is one of the areas government wants to push further and further. And reducing our reliance on export, on trade, on fixed asset investment. So that's your safe bet.
So, banks were, we hear U.S. banks talk a lot about the importance of China, but are we going to see much opportunity for U.S. financial firms over the next couple of years, or is that an area, been a lot of talk about the involvement of the leadership in the financial sector there?
Actually what we start right now is to bring private money into a lot of currently monopolized by the state sector, like the financial sector is one of them. We have some experiment in the southern part of China to have a private bank and to bring them into our financial system. And definitely that is one of the area, and not only demand by, you know, a lot of small, medium business, but to open. But also, I think we already put in the WTO commitment. So at a certain time, we have to open financial sector.
Let me ask you, we haven't really discussed it too much, but in terms of the election outcome, was there safe to say that folks over in China breathed a sigh of relief after the outcome because of the threats that Republican candidate Mitt Romney said that his first day in office, he was going to declare China a currency manipulator?
Definitely it's not, if Romney got elected, what could happen is Chinese people, you know, definitely feel hostile, and definitely psychologically it's not a good start. And, for Obama, definitely we have some working relationship. And we know how to deal with each other. We know the rules, and we know how the game to play. So you have some continuity in the two countries' relationship, politically, economically. And, starting from a hostile, attitude, it definitely needs time to smooth it out. If we have Romney as a new president in China, we have a new power and new, and it may take much longer than we thought. It's not going to be good for two countries.
Just a minute left. Well, one of the key points I guess we should make is that they do things a little different in China. A new president comes in here and immediately starts trying to change things, but it takes a while over there, right?
So that's what I just mentioned at the beginning. And historically, most important changes happen the third year.
So we've got a few years to wait, but fortunately we have Tian to help guide us through that time period. Thank you for joining us, and thank you, as always, for staying up late. I don't even want to think about
late.
What time it is over in Beijing, but thank you very much. And we'll be talking about the Chinese Communist Party conference through the next week as they continue to bring the new leadership out.
Listen to Bloomberg on the Economy weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.